Welcome to the Mindfulness Monday podcast. I'm your host, Carly Jean Puck, and as a member of the local Mental Health Advisory Council in Cook County, Minnesota, I'm passionate about promoting mental well-being. Every Monday, we delve into the world of mindfulness and discover practical techniques to cultivate a more mindful and balanced existence, making it make sense for your daily life. Rotating between short practices and interviews with folks whose work intersects with mindful living. Time to get more mindful. Thank you for being here, Molly.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Thank you. I first got the honor to connect with you years ago now. Gosh, 2017, I want to say, is when I did my 200 hour at Yoga North, which is wild now that I'm saying this out loud.
I know. Think about that. That's 7 years ago. Is that 7 years ago?
Yeah, that's 7 years ago.
That's fantastic.
Wow. Yeah, that really is. So could you tell us a little bit about your work at Yoga North and maybe a little bit of how you got to Yoga North and doing that work?
Absolutely. So I come by yoga really, I would say, as an antidote to a lot of stress and mental health challenges and living a life that was high stress and on all the time. And I found yoga many years ago when I was still living in Minneapolis. I live in Duluth, Minnesota now. And when I lived in Minneapolis, I found it and I did it. And I realized that yoga made me feel good when I was doing it, but more so it made me feel good in the rest of my life. When I would be on the mat, I would notice that I handled stress a little bit differently. I worked a little bit differently in my life. And so that was just even, I would say, starter yoga for me in many ways, right? Just the beginning phases, the gateway yoga. And then I did that when I was in the cities for quite a few years. And then I moved to Duluth and I really needed to change my life because I had very big stress and I had come down with some health crises and moved to Duluth to really change my life and found Yoga North when I moved to Duluth, I don't know, 22 years ago, 20 something years ago now. And basically I walked in the door of Yoga North and I feel like I never left. I started going to classes, started doing like workshops, then I took teacher training, then I started working there. Then I started managing the business for, at the time, Ann and Deb. And then I bought into the business and became one of the partners and now run curriculum and trainings and all kinds of good stuff. So it's just, I found it and I just would not let go of yoga because it was so amazingly wonderful for my mind, body, and spirit.
Were you recognizing right away that yoga was doing something for you outside of that mat? Because I also found yoga because I was really stressed out. It was my last year of college when I really got into it. I was at a liberal arts school, so I had to take a movement class or something. And yeah. I was like, oh, yoga. I've enjoyed yoga before. I have a Rodney DVD. And I started going and was just like, wow, my brain feels better when I'm there and things feel a little easier. But I wasn't like necessarily putting it together that was helping yet. I was just like, oh, that's a nice thing to check off and that it feels good. And then I moved on.
Yeah, I would say, I think maybe not in the first class or two, but within pretty clear amount of time, I felt like there was something different because in my occupation, I ran a big nightclub in Minneapolis and I had a really stressful job. And I feel like so much of the time I was just trying to control my environment when I lived in the midst of chaos all the time. Like that was, that's what that world was in good ways and bad ways. Mm-hmm. And I think when I went to yoga, I felt like I made more sense of my internal being when I was inside of all that chaos. Like even in the beginning, it was just being able to find a bit more focus in my body, a little bit more embodiment, because I would say probably when I was there, I lived not such a short distance from my body, right? I lived up in my head most of the time. And I think I just didn't have a way to ground or stabilize myself. And so I'm pretty sure that the practices helped me feel more connected, more embodied. And that gave my mind a different place to be, And I don't know if I put all that together in the same way that I can now, but I know I felt it was, I felt it internally.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. And so the podcast that we're on, Mindfulness Monday, is about mindfulness, clearly.
Yes.
And so I would say that yoga is one way to practice mindfulness, or maybe a tool to help us get there. Would you agree with that statement?
I would definitely say yoga is a way to practice mindfulness. It's the original mindfulness in many ways, right? If you think about going back to the ideas there.
Yeah, could you say a little bit more about that?
Sure. For me, what mindfulness means to me is being present in my body, being present with my breath, and bringing my mind back to the time I am right now. I do a lot of future casting. I do a lot of looking back, and what I think mindfulness is all about bringing ourselves to the present. And the best way I know to do that is to connect with the thing that lives only in the present, which is the body and the breath. Coming back to those things through yoga, through the practices of yoga, whether that's asana, whether that's pranayama practices, breathing, or whether that's any of the very many practices that come from not just yoga, but other Vedic disciplines too, right? Ayurveda, Samkhya, some of those things as well.
So you mentioned having some health crises come up. Has there been a connection for you between yoga, mindfulness, and healing from some of those things?
Yeah, I would definitely say that has happened for me. When I left the cities, the cities, right? Minneapolis,
It's so
small area.
Minnesotan,
I
right?
know it's all Minnesota, and came up to the north, up to Duluth. I had been diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, and I was having a lot of trouble with symptoms of that. And coming here and changing my mind, my body, my relationship to all of that stuff, slowing down, finding really more mindfulness and presence changed my relationship to that. And I stopped having those kind of symptoms. And I would also say that yoga has also helped me navigate or surf other health crises or health things that have come since then in the past 20 something years as well. Like, I couldn't think about getting through the things that we've all gone through in the past few years without having these kind of practices. Like, this is has been the absolute key for me, and it's a practice. I of course have some days that are hard and some days that are much easier, and either way yoga helps me no matter what.
I think you started to touch on it here, but could we talk a little bit more about yoga and as a mindfulness tool in terms of mental health? So anxiety and depression, I know those things are more and more ever present for many of us.
Yeah. I think that there's many things to talk about this, but one of the things I think that can be helpful to think of is that yoga and Ayurveda, which you're familiar with as well, Ayurveda is the sister science to yoga, and we really use in both of those disciplines the idea of the senses. And I have found that one of the ideas around the way dis-ease comes into the senses is actually, or comes into the system is actually because of the senses. Meaning we are beings that are sensing beings, right? We have 10 senses that bring in information and 10 senses in the way that we interact or move out into the world. And if you think about what happens for a lot of us with anxiety, with stress, with depression, with those diseases of stress, I would even say, is that often our sense practices are out of our awareness. So we don't know when we're overdone in listening. We don't overknow when we're overdone in seeing. We don't realize when we don't eliminate enough, whether that's literally
Interesting.
eliminating going to the bathroom or eliminating chaos and clutter in our life. The idea around Ayurveda and yoga says that overuse, misuse, or underuse of the senses can all cause disease. And when I think about my own mental health and working with people around mental health is that this is the area I go to often to work with it. And this is a big tool that we know that yoga brings forward. So that just working with the senses, what, how are you creating in your life? How are you eliminating in your life? Do you get movement? Do you get ways of taking yourself out of always being on the computer and seeing the landscape? How do you nourish your senses or take time to actually cleanse the senses, or what we might even think about as sense withdrawal in yoga, right?
You mentioned computers, and that's the first thing that I started to think of with this question too. And when you mentioned senses, is just how much we're taking in from technology. And I am not putting myself outside of that category as someone over here creating podcasts and trying to figure out the balance of that and how do you figure that out, I think is something that might sound silly, but a lot of people struggle with.
I don't think it's silly at all. I think it's an epidemic in many ways because the sense to live outside of our conscious awareness most of the time, we're just receiving or doing. And so we put the fact that they might have something to do with our mental health or well-being out of our, literally out of our mind, out of our consciousness. So I think it's just the way it happens. And so what we can learn to do is use a different sense, which is interoception, right? This ability to sense within in order to start to notice, oh gosh, I have been looking at my computer all day. My eyes are getting tired. I've been myopic and micro-focused. I need to figure out how to pull back and look away and look out into the horizon, whatever that is. And the best way to start making these practices is interoception, is starting to sense and feel how we feel inside. When we're so focused on external senses, we sometimes get a bit divorced from how we truly feel inside. And so practices, daily practices of checking back in multiple times a day, what's happening for me right now, is a really great tool for, I think, wellness on body level, a mind level, a spiritual level.
And in terms of social media, doom scrolling on your phone, like you're saying, being divorced from that, all of a sudden, maybe hopefully, we realize that, oh, this isn't making me feel good. I'm not feeling good anymore. But like you're saying, we're not paying attention to that. So we just let it drain us.
Yeah, I agreed. I'm guilty of it too, right? Like finding some almost release by moving into my phone or moving into my computer. But what it becomes is this sort of escape that actually turns into more stress in the system. And so I think, like, we think we're doing it to relax often or just to chill out or whatever, but it really does create more activation for most of us. I think one idea for me has been like, okay, allow myself to connect through those means, through social media, through my computer or whatever, for a certain amount of time. And then I need to start to notice, when does it create my breath getting shallow? When does it have my mind going, I should be doing this, or I'm not doing enough of that? What could I start to sense and even notice before I get to those places? Just any sort of shift in my physiology, any sort of shift in my mindset, and then go do something that's actually nourishing to me, right? Whether that's a yoga practice or do something like I like to make jewelry, and so doing some metalsmith or some beading or some things like that, use my hands, use my mind in a totally different way than being on a device. Right? Nothing wrong with the devices. Just have to use them as the tool rather than have them use us.
Yeah, that's a really great way to put it. I know that adult coloring books really made a splash there for a while, but I do admit that I love and have been doing this more and more again, turning my brain off from technology in a different way and just coloring. And I've got a few gifts from friends. I have a new girl coloring book. And just, it's so simple, but man, it really feels good.
Yes, it does. It's really, I think those things are great practices. Any way that we can engage our brain differently, any way that we can actually explore what creativity feels like in us, whether that's choosing a color to put in your new girl coloring book, or if it's using a recipe and cooking for yourself, or doing any number of things, woodworking, whatever it is. There's so many ways to be creative. I love to organize things. I love to shift things around and organize and decorate. And sometimes that's what I need. I need to allow myself that time to just use my brain in that way. It's calming to me.
I couldn't agree more. All of a sudden, I will be like, I think I need to organize everything physically in this room, right now, in this exact moment.
My books really are calling my name. I must alphabetize them or put them by subject.
If I don't do this right now.
Absolutely. I love it.
So if there are people listening and they're like, okay, I'm on board. I see how yoga can be a tool for mindfulness. But I think there's, for a lot of reasons, some intimidation around beginning a yoga practice or even talking about mindfulness in general. What do you say to people who are maybe new to these practices?
I think it's important to remember that not all mindfulness practices are for all of us. Why I say that is because I think people hear about mindfulness and they go, "Oh, you mean meditation." And they sit down and they sit in a cross-legged position on the floor or whatever, and it's uncomfortable in their body and they feel bad because they are not doing it right or something in their body, so their body's uncomfortable. And then their mind is restless or moving, or even worse, unkind to them during these practices. And so I want to say that I think that we really want to consider what is the right kind of practice for me. And for a lot of us, it's not going to be just immediately going to seated meditation, seated, quiet, mindful meditation. I actually think utilizing things like guided meditations or guided mindfulness practices, relaxations, moving meditations or moving mindfulness practices, these are ways to start. Or things like I practice Soma yoga, which is a really slow, mindful way of moving and integrating different ways to connect to yourself or move into muscles that are tight and release them. And I think these are much friendlier ways for us to get into mindfulness than expecting ourselves to sit quietly with our thoughts, which sometimes are not very helpful.
Yeah, and really cause a spiral
For sure.
effect quite quickly.
There's no quicker path to feeling bad about yourself than sitting quietly. If sitting quietly, letting your thoughts have their way with you, if you're being challenged by something, I do know seated meditation and those kind of practices are great. And I love to do them when I'm in the right place. But when I'm not, then it's important for me to do other things that support me, that support the pillars of my wellness, right? Maybe I need to have more sleep or more movement. Maybe I need to be thinking about nourishing myself in different ways and creating practices that feel harmonious to me or allow me to come back into balance or self-care. Self-care is such a buzzword, but when I think about self-care, it's really the practices that just support me feeling more connected to myself and that I'm saying yes to life rather than necessarily just another thing to do.
And I think it's easy to for things in our world to get commodified, like self-care and the idea of yoga. So there becomes a lot of myths and misconceptions around mindfulness too. I think there's some barriers to entry that are based on things that aren't necessarily true. Are there myths or misconceptions around yoga or mindfulness that you want to dispel?
Really, I can't reiterate this enough that when we're not ready to do seated meditation, we shouldn't. It can be unkind and even unsafe. That you don't need special equipment. That's important to know. I do think there are times in my life where I need a community or I need other people to help me orient to my being rather than orient to my habit. habits, because we're all big creatures of habit, and sometimes we can't even see them in ourselves until we have that mirror held up by another human being that says, oh, that helps me see, oh, this might not be so helpful for me right now. So I think community is an important thing to consider. How do you get yourself into a community around mindfulness? It could be simply coming to a podcast or listening to a podcast. It could be going to a yoga class. It could be going to an art paint. I know somebody who's doing watercolor painting, and that is a way for her to get out of her normal myths or routines that she has in herself about what mindfulness is, because that became very mindful for her. So it doesn't have to look any specific way, and you shouldn't have to need lots of big things to purchase, I think, right? This is all within us. This is all within us. It's really just about connecting to ourselves.
Yeah, it's such a great reminder. You don't need a new outfit and a new cushion and whatever else it is to be able to do any of these things.
Yeah, oh, great. I know even in my classes, I teach online and I teach in person as well. But online, I'm always like, grab your couch cushions, grab whatever
Yeah,
you need,
grab the
something new.
towel.
Towel. Yeah, exactly. We can use what we have. We don't need more. We've got enough in many ways. Yeah, you're just reminding yourselves. If now, I'm not saying if you feel like something will support you or be almost like a carrot that gets you to your mat or gets you to your practice, go for it, do it, but know why you're doing it.
I think for some folks, sometimes self-care feels potentially selfish too, especially if they're caregivers or people that are relied on a lot and not used to maybe taking that self-care. Do you find that with people struggling to let go and really nourish themselves fully?
Yes, I think there are probably many of us who face that sensation, that selfish idea around self-care, but I would say it's the greatest work of our life. And that if you accept that this is your job, is actually getting yourself to be the healthiest or the most cared for that you can be, so that you can be in the world. A, first of all, you could just do it for you. That's okay. The other side, really, I think we all need to hear this. Like, it is the great work of our life. That's why we're here, is to engage with the world, to take care of this body, this breath, this mind, this spirit, and then hopefully let the ripples of the care that we give to ourselves start to move out into the world. At least that's what I think. If I can care for myself better, I do become a better part of the world. I do become a healthier cell in the larger organism. And then I'm able to do those other care practices I want to do as a caring individual. So I think lots of people come up against this, and we just need to reframe this idea. And time is normally one of the things that I think people come up against. And time is true. That is definitely true. But the fact that our schedules are, my husband always says, you should talk to your scheduler. And what he means is you should talk to yourself about making
Ooh,
sure.
that's good.
Yes, I know, you should talk to your scheduler. So is it, we make the time for what we think is important. We just have to decide we're important enough, right?
Yeah,
And we
that
are.
part is huge. To decide that you're important enough, which the words seem simple, right?
It does. And I think maybe you heard me say this before, but self-care is self-love. And if we live in a place that has more people who are learning to practice self-love, I think it's going to be a kinder, more compassionate world.
That's a beautiful segue, as my next question I wanted to ask you was, how do you think mindfulness, practicing mindfulness yourself, ripples out into the community and into the world?
Oh, I definitely think when I am practicing, I am a better friend, a better wife, a better partner, a better teacher. I'm a better steward of the world. If I'm taking care of myself, I'm definitely doing better at taking care of all my other responsibilities. And when I'm overdone or out of balance, I'm not as good at it. I'm just not. I'm snappier, I'm quicker to get emotional. those things. I might that right now because I've got a lot going on. I think that it ebbs and flows, first of all. It's important to understand that there are going to be times when you're really good at being in your mindfulness practices, at caring for yourself. And there are going to be times in your life that you get overwhelmed or you forget to do it. And if we can all keep being kind reminders to one another to do these practices, again, I think we can get back to it. I practice this in my own person, and then I teach classes weekly. I teach one online and one in person. I teach workshops on working with yogic maps and Ayurveda. And because I do this, because again, I think these have been the best practices for me to be in the process of moving toward whole being, well-being in my life for a very long time. And so I wanted to share that, and I feel compelled to share some of the practices that work. So I think we become better sharers as well.
I like that. And I like the reminder that things will ebb and flow because there's something that happens, I think, when you get into a groove. Kind of these practices are maybe it's newer and then you get into a groove. And that first time you get out, boy, do you feel like a failure. So you're like, I finally hacked this thing that I know is good for me.
And then something fell apart and I fell off the wagon or whatever of it, of my practices. Yeah, that's gonna happen. And you'll just come back to it and don't beat yourself up. Just come back to it. And maybe it's also a sign that it needs to shift. Maybe the practice needs to shift. You're different. You need something different.
What practices are you relying on right now to get you through a busy time?
Soma yoga, and I do a lot of floor-based practices that are somatics with yoga practices like classic yoga asana or postures also weaved in. But it's really about moving slow. I feel like a lot of times my mind moves really quickly and is trying to grasp so many things. And this is the time and opportunity that I have to really slow down, to tune back into myself, to practice that interoception and proprioception. Proprioception's knowing where you are in space. And those two things, interoception, proprioception, in combination for me, really being embodied daily in some way, shape, or form, I think helps me so much. And I can really tell when I'm not doing it. I also think sometimes a bigger movement practice can be helpful. Walking is something that I'm right now doing in my life. I'm doing a lot more walking, trying to get a couple miles in a day and just feeling how it feels to move in a bigger way and exerting more. And I think that's really helpful for my mental health as well. I have so many. I think that I do Dinacharya practices, which are Ayurvedic daily practices that support me. And those are things like using tongue scraping, which sounds funny, but it's actually ridding the body of toxins. And that is, to me, one of those canary in a coal mine sort of practices where if I don't do that on a daily basis, I know there's something wrong. I know that I'm not paying attention to myself because it's so simple. It takes 2 seconds. If I realize I haven't done it for a day or two, I'm like, okay, Ma, what's going on? You're hurrying out of bed and getting on to a t you're not taking care of yourself.
I just want you to know that I've never stopped tongue scraping since 2 hour training.
Yay, good, yay. Well, then you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm
Truly, when
talking
you
about.
said
And
that, I was like, yes, because that is something I do every day. And if I miss it, I'm like, whoa.
Yes. Yeah. It's a big sign. And so I actually letting yourself realize what are the practices you have in your life that are your non-negotiables that you always do. And those will help guide you. Those will help be your reminders. And also, of course, having friends or connecting with people that also are like-minded or want the same kind of things can be helpful as well. Hopefully you have those people in your life. And if you don't, go find some.
Is there anything else you wanted to share with listeners that I haven't given you space to do so?
I think I've mentioned the idea around seated meditation as something maybe we move to eventually, but do know that there are such great guided meditations out there. Or if you want to start to sit more quietly within yourself, using a simple mantra like the words, so hum, I am that means, or a simple one called just this moment. Those are meditations or mindfulness practices that help you come back to the present moment. Stress and, as I mentioned, stress and anxiety are normally a lot of future casting. Moving into depression and some of the things, effects of trauma are a lot of pulling from the past. And our goal, I think, is to try and get ourselves back rooted in the present in more ways than we do when we're feeling that way. And if you can't get to the simple, back to a simple now, then maybe even finding ways to break down what's happening for you right now into smaller parts. That's what I think it is. I'm often trying to contain so much. And when I realize the overwhelm of it, I have to go, okay, what can I handle right now? And let the other stuff go for a second. Actually, just move into something smaller. I think the one last thing I want to say is there's a great quote from the Bhagavad Gita that I like to think of when I think about incorporating mindfulness into my daily life, is that on this path, no effort is wasted, no gain is ever reversed. Even a little of this practice will shelter you from great sorrow. Yeah, so we have the Bhagavad Gita, which is that classic text that reminds us of these things, and that quote just sits in me so that I know my efforts aren't wasted and I can always come back to them, even when I find I've gone astray here or there.
I think I needed that reminder too. Thank you for that, Molly. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, and I hope it goes really well for you. Lovely to be with.
Thanks. Thanks for listening to an episode of the Mindfulness Monday podcast. If you're enjoying this podcast, you can help us get it into the ears of more listeners by rating and reviewing it wherever you're listening on your favorite platform. Contact WTIP and let them know that you enjoy the podcast so we can keep creating content like this. See you next Monday.